Hi everyone. I had a follow-up to yesterday's podcast on anger from someone. I'll paraphrase it because there was a lot of personal information in the email. But someone had been in a meeting at which the head of the meeting proposed a suggestion that this person was absolutely against. And the person walked out of the meeting because they couldn't even countenance, couldn't bear to entertain for 1 second this suggestion. They were so angry, they just had to get out of the meeting. And so the question is, what do we do with that, really, when we feel so strongly, we're so outraged by a suggestion, it's absolutely abhorrent to us that anger is through us, completely in every cell of the body. And what do we do? Because what we can see really is that when we're absent, yes, there's a gesture or there's a signifier, isn't there, in walking out. But really, when we're absenting ourselves, when we're withdrawing, and it's fair enough, of course, it's a very logical reaction. And on one level, it's a we could say it's a more self-aware, more sane reaction than being in the meeting and throwing chairs around, punching people, creating harm out of that anger. To withdraw has a level of restraint in it that means no harm is done for sure. And though we can recognize that when we withdraw, absent ourselves, our voice is silenced, isn't it? There's no more contribution from us on that topic in that meeting. And what a shame, isn't it, when that's the topic we feel so strongly about. And so we've got this irony of the more strongly we feel, the more passionate we are about something, the more incapable we are of actually talking about it. And so what's going on here, and how are we really, how does it come about that our voice gets more and more powerful, more and more listenable to, and that our presence is fully there. We're not absenting ourselves in any way. We're really, what we're talking about is how does it happen that the things we feel most strongly about, we relentlessly pursue, and until they happen. So if there's something that without any question we believe should be taking place, how does the entire how is it that this the mind body can become a such so immersed in the reality of the problem and the situation that it becomes this conduit for all resources, all information, all experience and knowledge, all contacts brought into bear in this problem? And it's interesting because I know this person very well who's written in, and I've seen them in action do this many times. And so it looks to me, and I think it'd be the case for all of us, that there's something else going on. Because normally this person, when there's a problem, there's their whole the entirety of that system is focused in on solving that problem with such ingenuity and creativity. So what's happening? What is it? What's being triggered? And so confronted that escape is necessary. And I think for all of us, when that's happening, there's something happening beyond the problem itself. Because the problem itself, when it would be just put to us in another way, maybe, or there's some different circumstances in which we're invited to try to solve this or look at this from different ways, might well not have the same reaction in us. So I think that's the first place to begin. And we won't want to, because the mind will be in full defense mode. But if we can sort of just see what was really confronting, where was the trigger in that whole situation? What was the what were we reacting to really? And actually, sort of from there, we could say which part of the identity was at stake. What was actually in survival mode? What was under threat? And that will be an interesting exercise to see what's going on underneath the surface. Why that flight reaction was necessary. And so, bit by bit, that sort of honest, very accountable, very sane, very exploratory, and a mind full of inquiry, that starts to turn the spotlight inwards, doesn't it? Rather than outwards in huge separation, rejecting, resenting these people around us, but really looking in. And bit by bit, that is an increase in capacity, because it's accompanied with this very clear sense that suffering, that huge reaction against, is an indication that there is, in that moment, a mind closing off, which is so understandable, because this has been learned by the system as a way of surviving. So this is intelligence in action. There cannot be any shame in this. This is a way of behaving that has served the body mind well in the past. And it's just that now it's continuing and it's projecting, and it's meaning that our voice can't be heard. And that's an enormous loss. It's a huge loss when we have such knowledge, such experience, huge, you know, all of us have our own unique resources that we bring to every situation. And when that trigger reaction means that everything shuts down, it's a great, great loss to that meeting or project or problem. So that increase in capacity and that opening up starts to mean we can feel these things. We can feel hugely confronted. And at the same time, that confrontation is really saying, stay present here. Just really stay present. The mind in this moment is not sane. The reactions, the resentment, the resistance, this feeling of separation is not indicative of reality. It's indicative of the past. It's indicative of what projection is being played out right now. So remaining present, allowing that intense suffering to be there. And just, I mean, I think it's enough in those moments just to stay in the room. We don't have to speak in that moment. We don't have to do anything. Just staying in the room, having the feelings, curious about this mind, observing a old, no doubt for all of us in some way, a play out of old childhood patterns, a things at stake here that seem very vulnerable, but actually as we continue to stay, nothing is under threat that looks like it's under threat really. And just staying there, and that's already enormous. And just staying long, a bit longer, and allowing the mind to just fall out of that narration and outrage, and into curiosity. You know, really, like, really, what is this problem? And what is this suggestion? And what is it really about this suggestion that I think won't work? And just hang out there and allowing it to mull over in our own minds. Just being there still in the room with a mind engaged in the problem and not in the characters, not in the projection, not in the survival, but actually in the constraints and the actual data and reality of the problem, that is an enormous transformation for most of us, to have that capacity, just increasing little bit by little bit, and things become less and less personal that way. And they just become about the thing, what the thing is. And when it's just about the thing and not about us, protecting us, not about our views of the other people, but just about what is the solution here, then it always, the actual problem will draw the mind out of its insanity. Because minds love working on problems. That's what they're there for. That's their superpower. Minds hate working on a problem that can't be fixed, which is our outrage at that individual and the blame for them, or, you know, the protection of a self that seems under threat. Can't solve those problems. But it can really get to grips with the real world, this actual information and the constraints and the opportunities and the desired outcome. All of that is just heaven for the mind to be in. So, yeah, we all recognize it. Thank you so much to the listener for describing that situation. We all recognize it, I'm sure. And for all of us, it's an increase in capacity that is just really puts the entire system back in reality, doing what it is designed to do and which it does so, so brilliantly. And that's explore and analyze and dissolve what's not true and come up with creative ideas. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Angel. Lots of love to you. Bye.